At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Sissy Liu. Hey, Sissy.
Hi, Sissy. Hi. Thank you for having me. This is really exciting.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We're super excited to chat. Before we get into all that, though, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and giving us a background on how you got into photography?
Of course. You mean photography or film photography?
All of it.
Yeah, the whole shebang.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I'll try to keep it short. So my name is Sissy Liu, as what I go by online and in real life. I'm a Chinese citizen, moved to the U.S. about 8 years ago, and I studied music my whole life, and photography was something that kind of classical music. Mm. And photography was something that I discovered when I was in the U.S. in college. And I kind of maneuvered my way from starting from digital, actually starting from mirrorless right away into, and I have a really cheapo setup with like manual everything because I was a poor student. Mm. And just with like, you know, everyone knows the Nikon or Canon 51.8 lens. Mounted on my Fuji X-E1, I think, at the time. Yes. So that kind of, thank God that kind of prepared me for doing everything manual and really knowing what I'm doing, because the camera essentially is just a device, a box, and all I have to do is in the brain. And so from there, I liked it so much, so I added it into my major, studied photography in college as well as music, and moved to the city, New York City, after graduation. Then analog kind of introduced itself to my experience and to my career, and I have been sticking with it ever since. My first camera was, I think, a Nikon F3. Then,
oh wow, great first camera.
Yeah, I know, beautiful. Then my first real camera that I started using in analog format is the Hasselblad 500cm. So I'm very blessed in having
a great camera. Another great camera. Yeah,
I know. And I've been doing a lot of projects with them. I think people mostly know me or know my work, see my work from using the Hasselblad 500cm. Mm. And online, I call myself, as a joke, Lady with a Hassie, because my name is Sissy.
I like that.
I accidentally branded myself. And so now I've been known as that as well. So that's kind of a shortened version of how I got started in photography and in film.
When you got into the film aspect of it, was it something that, because for me, I got back into photography, but a friend of mine was like, shoot this role and get developed. And I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh my God. Was it sort of the same thing? Were you like captivated or?
That's a good question. I feel like you get a good amount of disappointment as much as well as like excitement from the first role. I think for my generation, we're blessed by like digital photography, right? Like it's so quick, the process, and you get to see everything right away. It's a really good practice like before going to film. So but the expectation is also brought really high. When I first entered film, it was exciting because I know it's gonna be a better image at the end, but my expectation from like not seeing anything until the very, very end, that was kind of, it's exciting, but also like I said, it's very nerve-wracking because not everything came out as what I want it to be.
True.
So mixed feelings.
That makes sense.
Yeah, thinking back to my first role of film, like after, because I, you know, I grew up with film, same with Chris. That was the thing when we were younger. And then getting into digital, and thank God for digital, because like it really did teach me all over again, because I didn't pay attention in school when I was learning this stuff. And then shooting that first role and just seeing like how terrible my composition and exposure and all that stuff was. And there's no changing it. It's not like you get to see it and kind of adjust and go again, you know. I still have it. I have a binder full of my first 36 shots, and they are just, there might be one that's okay. Like,
I still remember my first, very first shot. I was actually, my friend was helping me to load the camera and teach me all the basics in just how to operate a film camera. I remember thinking way too much before I take my first photo. There is a photo somewhere on the internet of me laying on a very dirty New York City street on my back and trying to get this stupid photo. It didn't even come out well, but I had so much like expectation and so much pressure knowing that it's going to be something permanent, like physical, you know.
So when you did photography in school, that was, I'm assuming, digital, right? That was like a digital course and stuff. Okay. Yeah. Just wondered if you were in the dark room or anything like that.
So I missed my term to go into the dark room. If I were to sign up to join the major right in the beginning freshman year, I would have had the chance, which was really a shame. So what I did, so I added my major in art and then fine art and photography my junior year. So I only had 2 years to finish the program.
Oh, okay.
So what I did was a lot in lighting in studio and in a lot of more advanced like area in photography, I guess. So
that makes sense because you're such a good portrait photographer. I can I can see where, you know, where that came in and where that helped.
That's so kind. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
One of my favorite things that you do is your advice series.
Oh, yeah. She was like, you got to watch the advice.
I was like, go watch all of them. It's so amazing because I just love, like, I mean, the way you have it set up to like the portrait and then the swipe to get the advice. It's like a little like secret unlock, you know?
Yeah.
What was your inspiration for that? Talk to us about that because I just love that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for finding that super inspiring. Yeah. I get a lot from doing, just for myself, every time after a conversation, for me, I get a lot out of it. And I'm so glad that it has found its audience online too.
Yeah.
So it's not just me getting the benefit. So the project, it has been a long thinking before it actually happened. How it really happened, so I grew up in a household, I'm the only child in, because Chinese policy, and my parents are very old for, I guess, my age group. So they had me when they were 40 years old.
Oh, wow.
And
interesting.
So that year gap, I feel like I almost was raised in a different generation just because their generation is very different. And also, growing up, a lot of people mistakenly thinking that they were my grandparents. And just a lot of that always made me feel closer to older people. And I always felt the world was not quite fair to older generation. And I realized that more when I moved to the Western country. So I feel like there is a big rooted culture of respect your elders in where I grew up in China. And here, I feel like the older generation, the community almost was discarded by the society.
Oh, and so sad to think about.
Yeah, it is very, it's very quite strange to me, because I feel like they have earned their right, all the right to be who they are. And it's a shame that we're not learning from them.
Right.
So the first idea of the project, I wanted to start with my parents. So I did a little European trip with my parents. That's when I was still working in my full-time job. I saved on the money. I was like, you know what? It's always been them bringing me as a kid on trips. This time, the role's going to switch. I will be bringing them onto a trip, all expense paid, and have them like kids, you know, following me
that's
around.
That's so cute.
That's adorable.
I know. So I documented that on just my phone, because I, like, every time we went on a trip, like, everyone wanted to document something. So for me, it was, I wanted to be more intentional with, like, them as my subject. And they have their gray hair already. They just look really lovely. And, like, they have their gray hair, but they act like kids. And that was what I wanted to show in that project. So that's the first step in developing the project. And when I came back from the trip, this whole world just kind of shifted. And that's right. I think I came back to the U.S. a month before everything happened.
Wow.
Really? Man.
And during that month, I was lucky enough to get the Hasselblad CM, the 500 CM. And I just didn't want to let that project go. Like, my heart was still in that mode to get capturing my parents being the older people in, like, a very scenic area. So I started doing that when I was back in New York and on Hasselblad. That kind of advanced the project into a more, even more intentional and narrowed idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's when they really take off.
Are you just going to keep it on Instagram? Because I could see it like as a show, like the photo and then the video next to it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That would just be so amazing.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to have a group show with a similar kind of idea. So I had five images last year, last August, shown in Tribeca. And my photography professor actually invited me into his show. So I was very fortunate to, like, even think I was being able to be in the same space as my professor.
That's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, we had a little QR code. So the photos are being printed and shown on the wall, five of them. And people can scan the QR code and, like, listen and watch their story when they go up to, yeah. So it's kind of like a virtual and physical space experience. So,
man, that's so cool. Yeah. I love stuff like that too, because I'm always a fan of, like, blending projects together. Like, I did a project a couple years ago where I hand printed postcards from Nashville when I lived in Nashville, and then I had like a local musician write music to, or it was originally supposed to just be his poetry, then it turned into music, and we did this album together, and it came out really, really cool. And I just loved, like, mixed media stuff like that. I feel like there's Ed Templeton. I think of Ed Templeton because he's, like, such a photographer, painter, you know, skateboarder, like, and he blends all that stuff together. Like, there shouldn't be rules or walls with this stuff. So I'm glad you're kind of forging ahead with this project. It's really cool.
Yeah, I really feel so strongly about, like, all kind of arts are connected. Like, and everyone should be able to enjoy art, and not just in a very formal, stuffy setting. It used to be like that. And I think we're out of that. I think we can really push the boundaries. And especially photography is still a new concept. Like, even though we grew up in a generation that's very vastly available for us, but it's still very new in the art world. So there are many aspects that's not being explored yet. And it takes creative mind to merge things with, like, other things, are the other form of art.
Yeah.
Has it always been easier for you to, like, approach somebody on the street to get their, number one, get the photo, but then, because I mean, I just think it's amazing that you're able to do that, and something I aspire to do. So yeah, any advice you have, or, like, what's your process?
Of course. So no, it wasn't easy at all. It's, I mean, imagine like just walking up to people. I would say I'm not entirely, I know, like, talked to someone before about the stereotypical type of photographer are usually introverts. I don't think I am much of an introvert. Mm. I'm pretty outgoing. I have my introverted side when I'm alone, but I'm very willing to talk to people. But it doesn't mean that going up to people isn't hard at all.
Right.
So there are a couple of things if I would give a little points. Like, first, in the city like New York, no one's really going to remember me. So I keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good...
Yeah. If it's a no, I don't have to see them again. If it's a yes, I also probably don't have to see them again.
Yeah, it's so a good way to look at it. Yeah.
But the second thing is, like, this is actually someone who I photograph. After talking to him for a while, he's actually a sociology professor. And he told me our interaction is going to be a textbook example for his lecture later on, because he was talking about our rejections have different types. So most likely the rejection we have on the streets are not personal, they're situational. And so we don't know what's happening in everyone's life, and that's why we talk to them, right? And sometimes when people say no to you, it's not because of you, it's because of everything that happened in their life. It doesn't allow them to wanting to engage. Right. So it's not, just don't take it personally. And I know it's hard because I have felt discouraged from rejections before, but keeping that in mind is really helpful. It's not your fault they don't want it. It's they have a reason, and don't carry that burden with you to the next person, you know?
Yeah.
That's good. I like the approach of, like, okay, on to the next, right? You get a no, and it's like, okay, move on, you know? I feel like the Hasselblad's a good conversation starter, so I feel because a lot of times people will stop me if I'm carrying my Hasselblad, like, what is that, you know? So then it's like, oh, well, can I get your photo while we're here? That's way easier than, you know, just coming up to somebody with, like, a camera that looks like a, you know, regular SLR or something, so I feel like that helps.
Exactly. That is totally, like, so accurate. So, like, when I was doing the first part of the project with my parents was with a phone, and I never needed to engage with people outside of, like, just strangers in general. And I was lucky enough to, like, come back and find a Hasselblad in a really good price range, because that really gave me confidence to start this project. Imagine, like, I kept imagining, like, if I were to do the project with, like, let's say, if I were still sticking with digital. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be, you know, there's like you say, it's a starting point. It's like it's a talking point.
Yeah.
And having a digital, I think I would have had to explain a lot more about myself and the intention than having something that's Hasselblad is so attractive.
Yeah.
Like,
it is.
It's easy to convince people why they need to be photographed
by
it.
You could be like, look down inside. See, look. And people are like, whoa.
Exactly. It made your art in a way more valuable, because people get to see what you're doing with it, but not necessarily get to see the result. That's another thing. I feel like people trust you a little more because you're more in the moment. And that's why we do film, right?
100%. And the portraits you get are just phenomenal too, by the way. I
really appreciate it.
Yeah. I recently got a Hasselblad, and like seeing your portraits is like, that's what I got to be doing with mine, man. I got to be just going out there and asking people, you know? Yeah.
You know what I actually found? There's an accessory that I found really helpful for portrait on the Hasselblad. So Hasselblad is so sharp. It's almost sometimes too sharp from my liking. So I have those close-up filters, and with like 0.5 meter and 1 meter close-up filters. What they do, so it's similar to an extension tube that some people use, but the close-up filter actually, it's almost like a magnifying effect. So it's a fixed focal range. When you put on a 0.5, it's only a 0.5 range of focusing distance. And the 1 meter, which I love to use, is like more friendly to portraits. What it does, it keeps the sharpness. You can keep the aperture down to 5.8 or like 5.6 or f/8.
Yeah.
And so you get the sharpness from Hasselblad, but anything outside of that focal range just goes into beautiful blur. It's not bulky, but it's like this beautiful soft blur.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
So it's very, it's when you're a photographer and you focus on those things, those photos stops you.
Yeah.
Just because how interesting that blur is to you, it's not natural. It's definitely like been affected by something. Like the you still keeps the sharpness in the portrait. So it's crazy.
Mm. Ooh, good tip. All right. I like that.
Yeah, you got to get yourself some of those.
I know.
Yeah, they're pretty cheap online. Just get some.
With the portraits and the questions, is it kind of, do you get the story first and then they kind of open up for the portrait, or do you go the portrait and then kind of get the story type thing? Because I was doing a lot of that street portrait stuff too, but I was stopping after the picture. You know, I'd ask them for the picture, have a little chat, show them the camera or something like that, and then move on. And I'm just so intrigued with your process on this, because I love that. I love interviewing. I've always wanted to do the journalism thing, but I'm a terrible writer. So
I would say you're a really good interviewer as far as I could tell.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it really depends. It depends in the situation by the people who I'm talking to. I think the more I do, there's more a routine that's set up to it. In the beginning, actually, wasn't thinking about recording the conversation. I only record because me and my friend joke about it. I have a fish brain. I don't really remember things for a long term. So in order to kind of knowing the story behind and knowing, just remembering that moment beyond the one single photograph I take, I will record for my own backup in the beginning.
Yeah.
Then I didn't realize how powerful that is to bring people to see what I'm seeing. So I started sharing them. It depends. Now I would actually approach asking for a photo, but before I take the photo, I would talk to them. So kind of, you know, like Hasselblad is not easy camera to bring on the street and to set up like the shot. It takes a while. And that gives me just enough time to get to know them a little bit. And for me, portraits is very important to know them a little bit, and I could kind of figure out how I want them to be photographed. There's a fine line because I don't exactly know where I'm still figuring out where my photography is landing. It's not exactly street photography. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly studio photography. Like, it's not like a studio setup portrait. I'm kind of blurring the line in between.
Yeah.
So if I were to take a photo without knowing them, that is more leaning to street photography, right? Like, I'm using my own perspective to take a photo of them. But after getting to know them, I would have a better understanding of who they are.
Yeah.
And then I capture the moment. That's kind of a different type of portraits, in my opinion. Yeah, I think right now I lean more towards getting to know them, then take a photo. But also sometimes if they're in a rush, I would take a photo first because they were just,
they're trying to get out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. I would rather getting that piece of like photo than, you know, like if they have to go.
Right. So.
That's such a cool process. I love that.
How did you get involved with the YouTube channel that you're involved with?
Pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As many other YouTube channels that started. So, yeah, I mean, I don't, as you can tell, I love to share, I love to talk. And I think once Instagram start taking off, I just finding that it I want to share more, and it's limiting on Instagram on just how much that I want to talk about. And me and my friends, so I honestly, I talk to anyone, I say 2020 summer was the best summer that I ever had because everyone was available.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's so much fun. Like, we got to walk around the city. We can't stay inside in like a closed space. So a lot of me and my friend are just like sharing, and they're there to talk to me. Usually they're like on film sets, like always busy. And this time we get to like share the knowledge. And I was like, why don't we do this online on YouTube? So that's kind of when we started like collecting peoples into like a group and sharing and documenting just everything. And yeah, the name Underdeveloped, it's just we're not like pros.
Yeah.
I love the name. I think it's great. It's such a good name. Yeah.
Thank you. There's some, we're a little regretting on the name because we can never, we can never make merch. Who's going to wear like Underdeveloped on their head?
That's so great.
You're hardcore fans.
But yeah, it's just something that I think we just wanted to engage more and share more in our conversation and not limiting just to talk to each other. Like you guys are doing on podcasts, yeah. Like you're sharing the knowledge to, you don't even know how far it can reach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always wild when we check our analytics and see the different countries and stuff that they download our episodes. It's just like, wow. Like, it's mind blowing. I love it.
It's amazing. And like, honestly, I feel like film community could be kind of, from the outside, could look very close, like was the word gatekeeping, I guess.
Yeah.
But we really, like, you guys are trying so much more ways to, like, bridging other listeners, and doesn't even have to be film shooter, like, right. We're so friendly, and you guys are doing so much to prove that.
Man.
Aww. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like what you said, it shouldn't be gatekeeping, and I like found your channel and was like, oh man, I got, like, there's even more stuff I could look at, and these people are inspiring me. Like, it's all about, like, the community and inspiring each other, and it's just, the channel's really great. You guys should be pretty proud of it.
Thank you. I'm actually very curious. How did you came across my work?
I came across your stuff when you did the video with Ben from In an Instant.
Oh, yep. That makes sense.
Did the deep dive and was like, yeah. Yep. started watching your challenge videos and stuff on there. And that's such a good thing too. Like that, you can learn so much, I feel like, when you limit yourself.
Yes. Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you about that too, because that's something Chris was excited about. Yeah, because I'm always like, you know, when you get in a rut, you're like, well, what do I even do? What should I even shoot? And just like having like a challenge, like not even, because you can get in, like, I'm going to do a photo series. Like, that's one way. But like, I really like the aspect of like, I'm only going to do this one thing or, you know. Yeah. So just how's that going?
Oh, I feel like at the end of the month, during it, not good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's so sad to limit myself during it, but until you see the result at the very end, and when you sum it up in the video like that, then I see why I did this, and like, I had more motivation to start the next one. But I love projects, and I love challenges. It kind of started when I was like with friends, and film, it's kind of a slow process, but sometimes when you have like 5 frames left and we really want to get them developed, we always struggle to find things to photograph like in a short amount of time. So me and my friend would do this, like, let's do that. The next one, you set your focus to like 5 meters and like that, just shoot that. And then and the next one, that's like, oh, that's fine, like a close-up portrait of something. And the next one, like, to have intention that help us to actually not waste a frame, you know, like it gets down faster. So it started that way. And I was like, what if we actually do something like more intentional and then the longer time, so it can really shift perspective. At the same time, I love doing the portrait project, but it is getting a little, what's the best way? Like, I'm not getting inspired by it anymore.
Yeah. It's getting kind of stale.
A little stale for me, and creatives like us, like, we always like something new.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I do it, like I said, I set up a routine and it started becoming this very similar portrait after portrait after portrait after portrait. And I want to feel more inspired by my work, and I don't want to post things that I personally don't feel inspired by. So I try to challenge myself to, how can I make myself a better photographer? How can I like see things differently? If I keep doing the same thing, I can't jump out of that same mindset. And that's why this year I wanted to dedicate it like each month to something different and get out of my comfort zone and really limit myself. Someone said in the comments, like, in a way, I expanded my perspective by limiting my perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How was your black and white challenge? Because me, I'm like, I'm mostly a color shooter, but I have my black and white moments. But having my whole month of black and white, I don't know.
It's a whole month of moments that I regret.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh man, like on the ski mountain, I think that's the one I heard the most, because like everything was so, like, the snow bounced back to like the colors on the mountain. Oh, I never was a black and white shooter, but now I could say I have more moments of wanting to do black and white than even color sometimes. I'm appreciating.
Wow, see? That's yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm appreciating the perspective. And that's one thing I realized at the end. It's a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
Like, doing black and white, you see things, you approach things completely differently, yeah, like how you would in color. And sometimes, like, now I'm seeing that. I feel like I had my whole world expanded to a different, like, there's a new world to be looking at. Mm-hmm. Like, I could be looking at the same street in color before, and now I felt so inspired by looking into it in a black and white perspective. So I have double the amount to shoot. I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. What do we have to look? Can you give us like a sneak peek of like stuff that you have planned for these challenges? And what's like July look like?
Ooh, I have a whole list. I'll tell you what I have this month, which is actually kind of related to what we talked about before. This month, I am doing Polaroids only. So,
I love Polaroids so much.
We're coming for you. Going to be studying all his reviews and knowing what to do best.
Right.
So, yeah, I just finished the challenge of no portraits. It was just published today. So that's something hurt my soul.
Yeah, I was how? I'm going to check it out because I can't wait to see how that worked out for you. But man, you've actually inspired me to like, I mean, I just had a baby recently, so it's been hard to go and shoot.
Congratulations.
Thank you. He's wonderful. I'm just, you know, I'm taking pictures of him, obviously, but to have like a little space of time to like, of like every month, this is the goal. Like, I think that'll really help. That's cool.
Is it the first, your firstborn?
It is.
How does it feel to be a mom?
It's so overwhelmingly wonderful. He's the best. Yeah.
How does it feel to be like a mom and a photographer?
Well, so.
Yeah. Let it out, Chris. Let it out.
I feel like I touched on it a couple episodes ago. So sorry, guys. I was like panicking that I wasn't documenting him properly as a photographer. And then so I like bought a digital camera because I was like, well, I have to be fast at it. I have to, because he's small and he's going to change so fast. And then I was like, nope, got rid of that. It has to be on film. It has to be on
Welcome
film.
Back.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know. It was like postpartum craziness happened where I was like, I'm going to get a digital camera and that's what I need. I think Timothy was probably like,
when you sent me, you're like, I got a Fuji and da da da. I'm just like, that's not going to last very long.
but it's great. He's my favorite subject.
So what do you find that's the most easy camera or like the most reliable camera around here?
So that's a great question because I love my rangefinder, my Leica M4.
Wow.
But it's not meant for a little baby, so unless you're really good at it. I've been using my Canon Elan 7NE, so you can put like your
have, like, Canon
glass on.
And stuff,
autofocus,
right?
All day long. Yeah.
That's very nice. I don't think I know that much about that camera.
Yeah, it's like a higher end SLR that they had for a while, not like the big dog, the EOS One or whatever.
Yeah, the One. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
It's kind of like the in between before like film completely fades out, but it's still like innovating new things. Mm-hmm. And before
I think it was like one of the last SLRs they put out. Yeah.
I see. Oh, yeah. That seems like a perfect like median for what
camera.
You want.
Yeah.
It's a total mom camera. I don't have to think. I can just capture his little smiles all day long.
Here's an idea for you. Next project, hashtag mom cam. It's always dad cam.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's so true.
I'm down for that.
I love it.
Showed us more of your world.
I can't wait till he's like running around and stuff. He's only 4 months right now, so I'm just getting him on his back smiling up at me, which is still great. But I can't wait till he's like, you know, jumping around and stuff.
So I don't know the feeling of being like a parent yet, but how many rolls do you shoot? How excited are you in capturing everything?
I mean, it's so far it's been a pretty good amount. The iPhone has really been the easy thing because I can just, it's funny. I think we're talking to Alec about this, how his generation will have like, you know, 75 photos of the one moment.
Yeah.
To where like, you know, there's like one picture of whatever my brother and I were doing. There wasn't 75 of them, you know. But yeah, I'm shooting a ton. Long story short, whether it's the iPhone or with film. But yeah, he's again my favorite subject.
Aww.
Yeah.
All right. So with these monthly challenges, is there any end goal to this? Are you gonna use any of this work for anything specific, or are you gonna? Is there any sort of, you know, kind of maybe like a little project at the end of it, kind of showing off your work and stuff like that? Or is it just kind of something to do right now to learn?
Good question. I actually have think about this before I even started it. Like my last, well, it's still ongoing, my portrait project with the elderly people. Mm-hmm. That one, ultimately, I do wanted to have it either in like a solo show or like a book format, because I feel like there's a lot that could be curated.
Oh, I would love to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a really big archive from them. So definitely that is something. And when I do that, it's a way of putting this project to an end. And for the project, I'm doing the monthly challenges. Instead of doing something like that, like a photo book style, I do want to make, I actually haven't shared this with anyone. I want to make 3 or 4 volumed baby zines.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I found this publisher in like a really tiny bookstore. They make those palm size, like really tiny books, art books, and they have been sold in MoMA and everywhere in museums. And they're so well made, but they're tiny.
Yeah.
And the idea is, because everyone who's watching it now will hopefully personally also feel connected and involved in the process.
Yeah.
And so I would like to kind of select a few from each month, my favorites from each month, and make it to like summer, like spring, summer, autumn, and winter within the project into tiny zines. And it wouldn't take too much of your space, because I know buying a lot of photo book, they can just get really heavy and they could just fill up your shelf space. So I want to make something that's still there, but tiny. So people can like, anyone who would like to have a piece and going through a year of this project with me can like have a souvenir in the end.
Yeah, so. That's really cool.
Yeah, what a great little idea. That's awesome.
It's going to be a fun one. I hope it will actually execute it in the way that I wanted to, because that's another thing, right? Like,
yeah, and we know you've done stuff with Moment, like their classes and stuff. Is teaching something that you, I mean, clearly when your challenge videos, I feel like there's some teachable moments in those videos, and I really enjoy that. Is that something that you also like to pursue, or is it just kind of comes with the territory of you being a YouTuber kind of?
Yeah.
It's kind of half and half.
Yeah.
Definitely YouTube has opened up the world of like lectures and talks for me. Honestly speaking, I don't think I'm qualified to teach. I am not. I am not trying to teach anyone anything new. This like film has so much nerdy. You can go so deep into film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I, no matter how much deep the surface I have explored, there's still so many niche branches that goes into film photography. I'm not a spokesperson in that kind of technical field. So I'm not teaching anyone anything new. What I would like to do is sharing, right? Like even on the YouTube channel, like I try to position myself as someone who share my process rather than teaching you. And so as Moment. So if anyone who have purchased it, a lot of comment that I'm getting is it felt more like a documentary and seeing how I work alongside with me than me educating them how to do things. It's more about how I do things, and if you can take any points, if it was inspiring or motivated to you, that's the most I want from it. So
yeah, I feel like at least for me, sometimes that's all I need. Like we're just talking about inspiration.
Yeah.
Like I just need something that's going to light the fire.
Yeah, exactly. And then like honestly, I felt like there's so many photographers who has beautiful work, and some people they just don't want to be like sharing everything. And I want to be someone, I almost like open up myself as this personality. I want to be accessible to people who want to start, who has started and now have a new perspective just by seeing how I do things. So yeah, I'm just kind of an open book, and I play this role of like, I make mistakes and it's okay.
Yeah, but I like that, because then it makes it not so intimidating for other people to make mistakes when we see people also doing it and making mistakes. Like your Kodak Gold video, I love that you were like, This one was out of focus, but I have to show you it still because this is what I was going for. And I was like, I like that.
Yeah.
I really, yeah.
I mean, I feel like film, right? Like, we know. Yeah.
Film,
it, mistake
right?
Mistake is inevitable. Yeah. And I think it's also like the beauty in film is to cope or like to learn how to accept your mistake. And that's, it's so hard, but it's I think the most valuable lessons from at least from my film journey.
Yeah. And the thing about it is to at least for myself, when I mess up, I like get so discouraged. I'm like, who am I? I'm a joke. I shouldn't be doing this. I quit. You know. But then I'll get a really amazing role or whatever and I'm like, "Oh man, this is the best. I can't get enough of it," you know? So just like, I think like I said, showing that, oh, I made a mistake too, but I moved on. Like, it'll help people be like, okay, I guess I won't quit then, you know?
Also, this is a conversation I just had with my friend about how biased and personal we felt attached to our own work.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But sometimes even just by showing to other people, right? Like someone sees different things and mm-hmm. also they might not be as bad as you think they are. Also having time between the photo and you, like the photo taking process and then the viewing process, like it's easier for us to enjoy and viewing other people's work because we don't know what happened when they shot the photo. All we take is the very end result, what they want us to see. But I found myself, I had some time like coming back a role that I just felt like I'm done. I'm not.
Yeah.
Gonna,
like, I know it. I right? know it. Jeez.
That feeling. And then it will be like 6 months later that I was cleaning out my archives and then going through it again. I was like, they are actually not that right. bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I see what I was trying to do and I did execute it. It may not as be as well as I wanted it to be, but it was not a half bad photo. So. Yeah.
And I thrive on the mistakes. Like some of the favorite photos that I've made were, I'll never forget, I did this picture of a tree and it was like winter time and it was such a beautiful scene and it was on large format. So, you know, you're like thinking of 800 things at once right there. And I left the shutter open because I was focusing with it and I pulled the thing and I went to click the button and it was like, no. And I quickly slid the thing back in. I developed that shot anyway, thinking, you know, maybe something came about it. The photograph was beautiful. I was just like, this mistake worked out so well.
Yeah.
And then I tried to replicate it later again. I was like, I'm going to try to do it again. And it failed miserably.
Never.
But it was just like one of those amazing things that happened because I, you know, flipped the film carrier around and took it properly. And that photo was so stale and just like not it. It's just sometimes those mistakes are amazing. You know, I hate admitting that because I want people to look at that photo and be like, wow, he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that was intentional. He's
but
an artist.
No, man,
oh my gosh.
Some of the mistakes are so good. Like, they're so great.
Where can I find that shot? I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, it should be on my Instagram. It's a picture of just a lone tree.
I will go find it after this.
I'll tag you in it after this.
Please, thank you.
I will.
Now, with that background knowledge, I feel like I will see it differently. But I'm very interested to see what you did there.
I should repost it so I can put both of them. I'm going to have to find the photos. I just got a new computer, so my kind of archives all over the place right now. So it's just sometimes, even just like rolling around shooting 35, if I'm doing like nighttime photography and just kind of holding it and hand holding long exposures and stuff, like sometimes the unpredictableness of it is just, I like that though. I'm like a gritty lo-fi. Like, I'm just really into that stuff. So
you're made for film. You're made for this community.
Yes. I had a really nice Sony mirrorless with like a couple different lens system that I got mostly for video. And I'm like, I'm going to limit myself. I'm only going to shoot this digital camera for a week and see what I can do. It's some of the ugliest stuff I've ever done. Like, I am literally meant to shoot film. Like, that's just how it is.
It's probably too perfect for your liking.
Yeah, it is.
Exactly.
And like we always say, I end up taking 16 shots of the same thing all over and over because I got to make sure I got it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. I know that feeling.
Uh-huh.
Sissy, do you do any digital for work or is it all film everywhere?
No, I don't own a digital camera anymore.
Yeah.
There's actually a tragic story behind it.
No.
Not because I like not because of like actively saying no digital anymore.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I would say it now, but it was a hard goodbye to the digital era for me. That forced me to completely shoot campaigns and like everything. Like now, if you hire me, you have to accept that I shoot film only.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's a good leverage, honestly. But yeah, I was doing a video at a wedding, and I fell backwards with the digital camera on me into a fountain.
Oh no! Oh no!
No.
Oh no!
There's still a footage. It was shooting slow mo, so the footage came out in like 120 frame of like slow fall to the fountain.
Oh, I love it!
Like with the you see my foot like against the sky. So that's my tragic end to digital, which is probably for the better.
That is a heck of a way to go out. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I never look back. It's like, hey, it felt like it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do your potential clients respond? I always ask when people are like, I just shoot film. How do they take that? Are they like accepting or do they
I feel like the culture is changing right now in the photography industry, which is
thank goodness.
It's so exciting.
Yes.
At the same time, it's also more competition and more like high price everything,
right,
as we all know. Oh my gosh. So in the beginning, it took a lot of convincing. Like people need to be convinced why for me it's better to work in the film workflow, and I have to tell them, like prove to them that these are the reasons. And now and then later people kind of find me because of film, so it was easier that way.
Right.
And now actually something is changing in the air. People actually tell me they want film straight out of the gate, and they would cover everything. That's how they came to me with a job.
That's great news. Wow.
Yeah.
I love hearing that. So,
yeah. I recently done a pretty big campaign, and they pay more in film and development than my rate, which is insane to think about. Which I don't think I charged little, but that's still like, it was so much film that's being used, and so satisfying.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with a couple listener questions for Sissy right after this message from our sponsor.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Just wanted to jump in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch of these already. We develop some film, we laugh, we talk shop. It's a good time. We like to get a former guest to hang out with us as well, so it's just a blast. And if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to help support the show. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners, and we're going to do two for Sissy today. And the first one comes from Dear Dolores, and they ask, what do you find the most challenging/rewarding photographing strangers?
We kind of touch on this a little bit before. Mm-hmm. So, man, the most challenging for me, at least, because I don't think technical part is a challenge here. I think you already have to develop a pretty good sense of how to take photo and how to take proper good photos before you even go on a street. So for me, myself personally, the most challenging part is to just do it. I mean, it sounds easy, but it is the hardest part, is to just have the courage to walk up to people or just even have the courage to bring your camera out.
Yeah, yeah.
There are days that I honestly don't want to be out, and let alone taking photos, but that leads to actually the most rewarding part is when you, in a way, force yourself and put yourself in front of that situation and getting to hear people's life, and ultimately for me at the end to capture that moment for me, for myself. It always brings me back to a good mood than I approached them before. It always gave me, it's the interaction.
Yeah.
There are so many stories to be heard in this world. And for someone, even like us, right? Like, you're asking so many good questions that some I may or may not have thought about before. But talking to you guys, I feel like if you never asked, I would never share those.
Yeah.
And I enjoy sharing them. And who knows what they will like inspire who else other in the outside of this podcast or this conversation. So on the street, there are so many people that are waiting for you to ask questions or waiting to have this kind of interactions. So they're willing to share. It just takes a person to be willing to go up to them and ask. For me, is that interaction, that kind of piece of satisfaction. Like, it's the humility inside of everyone's heart. Like, we all have a soft heart. And sometimes just take a little bit of effort to bring that out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what I take the most out of it. And I always say photos that came out of from it, or the advice or the video, are a byproduct of that moment that we had. It's something to show people, but it's not the most important part. I'm not sad if some photos not coming out. Like, I would be sad because we're a photographer, but that's not the most important part for me.
Yeah.
A good photo is just cherry on the top. Yeah.
Right. I think what the one of the things that inspires me the most about this series that you do is, you know, this day and age, everybody's like down in their phones all the time. Like, we don't even know how to talk to each other in the real world. So I think, like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? People are like, oh, yeah, let's talk. You know, like, you must walk away like just so warm and fuzzy just because you've had a conversation with somebody that maybe you wouldn't have before. And
exactly.
I think that's really cool.
Exactly. And I feel like as photographers, we're observers, right? Like, we observe what's showing around us. And they're one way to observe without have a deep dive into their life. And there's that has been the culture, like, for many years, right? Like, street photography, snapshots.
Yeah.
But it also, like I said, photography is so new in the art world. And I wanted to dive in. Like, I want to not only have that two-dimensional layer, I wanted to have more than that, right?
Yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, it doesn't have to be a long conversation. It doesn't have to be, like, for me, I have a focus group of older people, but it doesn't have to be like that. It could be anyone.
Right.
It could be your family. Have you, like, for you, you have a newborn, you've been taking so many photos, but for lots of people, have you even take a proper photo of your parents?
Right.
Like,
I have been now because my son is here. So now I'm like, I want a picture of, you know, of them together with the baby, my dad with the baby, like my in-laws with the baby, everybody. Like, I want to document this time specifically. So I've been really in tune to that. Like, we've got to take these photos, you know?
There's so much more. Photo is just a layer of what we see. There's so much more beyond that. So, yeah.
Good answer.
All right. We got one more for you here. So this question comes from Jimmy Shoots Film. And they wanted to know, would you say that street photography is viewed differently between China and the U.S.? If so, how?
Hi, Jimmy. I also shoot film, so maybe I should also change my name. So in the very beginning of my introduction, I did mention that I moved to the U.S. and I found the medium of photography. So I don't think I could really speak on being a photographer in China. what I can see is what I observe from like what I see other people have taken the photos of. So street photography in the US is very freeing, obviously. And there are many creative ways. Like I feel like in every city, there's a different kind of character into street photography. It's almost like a culture in every single city that has like a completely different approach to street photography.
Yeah.
And I think also the crazy range from like New York City and to a suburb, like that, I think those can still count as street photography. Maybe they're more lifestyle, but there's a huge range and they are very, I think there's, the world of street photography is very developed in the Western countries versus in China. Like, so immediately when you ask that question, the image of street photography in China that pop in my head are image that's made by travelers that went to China.
Oh, okay.
From my understanding and knowledge of what I see of street photography of China, that's made in China, they're less local making street photography for multiple reasons, for like restrictions. And like, maybe people just don't see the world like that when they're living in it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I think in the US, we have a really good influence on social media and like in gallery space. I feel like America in general very encourage art. Like the value in art and the appreciation, the respect in artists is highly valued here. And I don't think I can say the same in China. Mm. Every parent wants you to have a feasible career growing up. And the social status is what they really want the most, right? So there's not very encouraged to pursue art. Like, artist is almost like a bad term if you introduce your child as like their artist. So I know a lot of hobby photographers that, and most of their photos, what I can see is that from what I've seen are more Instagram worthy, or they follow the trend that has brought up from America or like any other Western world, and they executed that vision into their society. So that's something that actually I'm very interested to find out how Chinese people would see China in their own lens. And I don't think street photography is very much developed, and I really want to be that bridge and bring that perspective there. I haven't been able to travel back for now 2 or 3 years, and the last time I was there was briefly. So now I'm more, I am a better photographer than when I was there, and I want to bring my vision and then show people how I see my home. And I'm just waiting for that moment to happen. But yeah, there is a very different approach and a very different culture in China and versus in the US.
Well, I can't wait for you to go do that. That's going to be such an awesome.
Yeah. Me too. Maybe I'll make a YouTube video about it.
Yeah, you got to document all of that, please.
Man.
Another good question, another great answer.
Yeah.
So now we got to hit you with even more tough questions. I think we might know the answer, but this is the question. If you had to pick one camera stranded on a desert island, you only can have one for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
You can't do me like that.
Right. We do everybody like that. Yep. We're terrible.
Before I answer, can I know your answers, both of yours?
Sure. It's kind of changed since I think the last time somebody asked me on the show. I think it would be my Leica, my Leica M4. It's just such a beautiful camera.
Yeah, it's a tool too. Like, you can probably start fire with that.
I could. Or like fend people off. Like, I could hit people or bears or whatever. Or I guess bears aren't on islands. You know, tigers if they're on islands.
Right. Sea lions.
Sea lions.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I usually always say my Mamiya RB67, but I think it would be that. But I'm also going to like somehow sneak my Leica as well to the island. I'm taking two. I don't care. Stop me.
That could probably, the RB can probably double as a chair if you need to sit.
Or like a flotation device to get out of there somehow.
No, you'll sink. It's too heavy. Are you crazy?
Yeah, you're right.
Wow. Wow. You guys have chosen. Okay. Those are like really good legendary cameras. I wonder why you would take the RB since it's like not a metal built, or like it's not completely manual or like mechanical?
Well, there's no rules on this island.
Okay.
You can, there's a film lab, so you can have film, you can have batteries.
it's a pretty mythical island.
It's magical.
Oh, wow. If that's the case. I think people would expect me to say Hasselblad.
Yeah.
But if I were to only have one, I would actually choose my Nikon F3 for sentimental reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a great camera.
For sentimental reason, for two. Yeah. It's I got that camera in Pakistan when I visited. It was left there by a journalist and the family who I stay
what
with.
What a story.
Like, what?
It's so, it's crazy. Like, I didn't even know what I was given to, like, at the time.
Yeah.
The story behind it is so beautiful. And when I get it, when I would start using it, I realized the electric wasn't functioning properly. And so, but I would still be able to manually shot the manual shutter. So that's why I think that would be my one camera to have, because although it's, you need battery, but it can still function without it.
Yeah.
And it does so much more. It's more versatile than the Hasselblad. Hasselblad is so great, but it wouldn't be the only camera that I have.
Yeah.
And the Nikon, I think, is, it can do it all. So that would be my one and only.
Yeah.
Good answer. I love it.
It is a great answer. Do you find when you shoot like campaigns and stuff, do you use both or like?
The last campaign I was involved, I had, I think, 5 cameras with me.
Oh, on the set.
That would be me. Yep. I'm like, take as many as I can fit.
Exactly. Across all formats. I start from like 110 and 35mm and like SLR and a point and shoot and 2 medium formats, 6x6 and 6x7. So, you know, like everything you can bring.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, like I found a good workflow because 6x7 is slower. So I would genuinely use my Nikon, and I have so many lenses for the like Nikon, so I can just be really creative with it. Like I do really tight and I can do super wide. I can use flash. Like it's an easy change, smaller camera body. So that would be like my creative and exploration, like fun shoots. Then when I know what shot is definitely going to be the one, I will transition into medium format and capture that for real. So
I love it. Cool. Yeah. That's so that's good. Great.
Okay. We have a part two of this question.
Oh man. As if it wasn't hard enough the first half.
I know. So second part of this question is there anything that you're lusting after? Any camera that you don't own, but you're like, I need this. I want to buy it. Another hard one. I know. I'm sorry.
Oh no. You should check my eBay search history.
Right.
Only one?
Well, you can hit us with a few. Why not?
Okay. Currently, I don't like that I'm saying it, but I'm going to say it because I'm an honest person. I'm really curious about a Contax T2. I don't need it. I don't ever need it. I don't want it, but I do want it. Because
it's such a good camera. I mean,
That's what I heard. And I don't want it mainly because how hyped it is.
Yeah.
But also there's a reason behind the hype. It is a good camera from what I've heard from everyone. And so I want to ultimately have experience of it. Maybe just like buy it and sell it real quick. I want to see what the hype is all about. I also, in the same round of hyped camera, I also do want to own Leica one day. I don't think I need it again. I think all the camera can do really good things. I don't think I need a Leica to do what I do. But I also want to just have it to see why people have so much hype behind.
Yeah.
And from what I see, like I borrowed it a couple of times and it's incredible. But I want to have my own one day, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
Any specific model you have your eye on?
See, I don't even know the Leica world that much to know. I'll be happy with any one of them if anyone wanted to donate one and support an artist.
Well, that was us when we started the show. We weren't like a shooters either.
Nor picky. It's like we would have taken any single one.
Right.
Wait, I wanna your answers because I always are in the lookout for new cameras too.
Oh, go look at my, let me see.
I would like a Mamiya 6. I want the square format, you know, I would like that. The 7, I mean, I would love a 7, but the 6, I really love and feel connected to square format, and I don't shoot it nearly enough. I think it always complements 35 millimeter really well if you use them too for the same project. So that's my white whale right now.
Does that, you think, is inspired by like Polaroids?
Oh, yeah. I carry a Polaroid camera with me everywhere I go. So like, I love square. Yeah, definitely. Mm. And I think that's why I have such a hard time shooting like Instax wide, because it's not square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can I, since this month challenge is about Polaroids, can I give a little tip from you during this challenge?
Yeah. What do you have any, do you have a question or do you need me to?
Just tip of taking better Polaroid photo, because I feel like the way that you approach Polaroid is almost like black and white and color. There's a different mindset when it goes into Polaroid, and also square format, right? Like there is a change when you're doing Polaroid photos. So I'll tell you what Polaroid cameras I have.
Yeah,
so
I was just going to ask, what camera are you using?
Multiple. So this month's challenge is going to go across different format of Polaroids. So maybe starting with the Go, the new one. And I have 3 XS70. I have XS70, the brown leather, the regular, the sonar with just the sonar, and I have the S680, SE680. So I have all of them. And I also will be doing, so Polaroid 35mm film. So my friend has a roll. We will be developing it with the kit. Those are going to be my Polaroid approach. So, what would your advice?
My main tip for Polaroids is always, there's always more head space than you think there is. So when you're focusing, just know that there's a lot more room up top than you, than it looks like. At least for the two cameras I've used for the last couple years, if I'm looking in, I always bring the camera down. Or do I bring it down or do I bring it up?
I think it's down.
Yeah, I bring it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your large format head is like trying to do the calculation.
I'm always thinking, because I know there's always, I bring it down because there's always more room up top than there is down at the bottom. Because forever I would always shoot the shot and then there'd be so much room on top and I'd be bummed. So now I always drop it down.
So always bring it down. I see.
And try to shoot SX70 film as much as you possibly can, rather than 600 with an ND filter, because the SX70 film has more vibrant colors and I think it just renders the photo way better than the 600 film.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that about Polaroid.
I've just always never been impressed with 600 film.
So I agree.
Then I would not be using this 680 then.
You can just use I guess the 680 would be, I mean, the 600 film is great. I've seen great results. I just feel like there's a layer almost that you can tell when it's 600 film over SX70 film. At least for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Ever since I got my 680, I've been shooting on that only, just because it gets all the feature that I need.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I didn't realize it was a lot different, because I thought it was maybe just the shipping, the patch, like a different production line.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. SX70 film is just, I feel like it's sharper and the colors are just like way more vibrant.
To me, I felt it's a deeper tone.
Yeah.
And I thought that's just only the ISOs.
And that might have a lot to do with it. I'm not 100% sure, because I'm sure it's made probably exactly the same. You know, I think it's just just kind of how, you know, finer grained films are always like, you know, Hectar 100 or something like that. You know, you always have, I just feel like, and I'm a grainy person, so I don't know what my beef is really with the 600 film, but like, I just always have to be shooting SX70 if it's in there.
Wow. All right. I'm going to write them down.
Let me know if that helps at all.
Oh, so much. I feel like, so I'm starting my project tomorrow. Like, this month starts tomorrow for me. And this is a great way to start off that, because I wouldn't have known.
There you go.
You would have seen so much headspace that's going to hurt. now I'm saving my film. Thank you so much.
There you go.
That's funny.
oh, did you find more? Chris, did you find more of your camera? Like,
oh, yeah. Did you ever say your camera, Chris?
Oh, I didn't say mine. Okay, okay. I've been, like, super thinking about, like, getting more, into medium format. Like, I want bigger, like a 6.7 camera, like the Mamiya. And then, I don't know, Linus got me on his, he got a Fuji, what is that? The 6.45
GA. Yeah, the 6.45. Mm-hmm.
That looks really good, too. Like, a point-and-shoot large or medium format camera is, like,
it would be
it's calling me.
It would be quick enough to catch your son. So.
I know. See, there's a reason I should get it. I'll tell my husband. That's why I convince him, you know? Like, I need to be faster when I'm photographing the baby, you know?
Oh, man.
I love that.
Imagine.
Yeah, but medium format has been pulling at me lately. I want to get bigger negatives. So.
Honestly, yeah. At the rate of, like, how much a 35 millimeter mm-hmm. is charging right now, there is no reason to not do medium format to get a better quality. Right. So
exactly.
You'd never think that that would be the case, that 120 I film know. Would be less expensive than, mm-hmm. yeah. So crazy.
I really hope this is not just a wave. I really hope this is here to stay. I mean, we're definitely experiencing something that's like a trend, but
yeah.
I hope it doesn't die down and goes another sad part of like closing down factories and all that. So yeah, I'm fingers crossed for
it. It doesn't feel like that. Okay.
Yeah,
to me,
I was
anyway.
Just gonna say in the 6 years almost 6 years we've been doing this podcast, we've only seen it grow. You know, yeah. And yes, we've seen a couple stocks and stuff go away. But, you know, when they go away, you know, three more films pop up. So
I think
we're at a good spot. We'll be okay for a little while.
I'm just hoping that one day, I think it's coming soon. I don't know who's in develop of that, but I hope someone makes new film cameras, like premium film cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
So, same.
Yeah, maybe we should start it ourselves.
Right?
I know, right? Let's do it. Let's go.
I wish I had the brains for that.
Oh, man. That's why I'm not doing it. There's someone right? there for the job.
Same here.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, Sissy, I'll say it again. This has been phenomenal. Thank you for joining us. I'm super inspired to go do a challenge now.
Yeah,
so
me
thank
too.
You.
Yes. Let me know how it goes.
Definitely. Where can everybody check you out? Where's your website? You can plug the channel, whatever you want.
Sure. I mean, Instagram is where I'm most active. So that's mm-hmm. at under Sissy Lou _ Sissy _ Lou. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. Sissi _ Lu. You can pretty much find me under that title everywhere on Instagram, TikTok, and my website, sissylu.com. So spelled out .com. Glad I found that the domain name.
That's yeah. great.
Yeah. On the YouTube channel is where you can find more in depth of me and just pick my brain, kind of see my process even more than just a glimpse on social media. So me and my friend has a combined channel. So it's not only me, you can get to see a lot more other photographer who might be inspiring
so
to you. That's under develop. And we kind of trying to be cool, took out all the vowels. So it's under spelled out develop DVLP. You can find us there as well. Yeah.
Awesome.
Timothy, where are you?
Guys, I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Timothy Makeups. I also have some YouTube stuff. Haven't updated in a while. I know. Go to the search bar. Easiest way to find it. Just type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of my stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much
Yay.
Fun.
Yay! Yes, this was awesome. Thank you, Sissy.
Yay!
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
First off, Chris and I would like to thank Sissy for coming on the show. What an amazing story. What wonderful work and projects you have going on. Just, we're so excited to get you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time, Sissy, and we can't wait to see what the future holds for your work. Thank you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hangs over there, and a bunch of other stuff. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Like we say all the time, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. That's going to wrap it up for this week. We had a great chat with Sissy. That was a ton of fun, and we will see you next week with an all-new episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.